Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
In this episode, we have a visitor that's an old friend of ours that's just found out that he's a collector. He's going to tell us about some of the great pieces of memorabilia that he owns and some of the stories on how he got them, taking us through some legendary NFL players. It's all coming up with Scott Ferguson Green in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we have another great collector coming on to talk about some pieces of his collection and how they affect and contribute to football history. So we're going to talk a little football history, talk a little bit of memorabilia with our good friend, Scott Ferguson Green. Scott, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Thank you, Darren. Thank you for having me again.
Yeah, Scott, you know, you have been on a bunch of times here, I believe. You know, I remember way back, probably like 3 years ago, we talked about your Phoenixville club, the Union Club of Phoenixville, and some of the great things that they did. And, you know, you really enlightened us with some of that stuff. And we really appreciate you coming on here again to talk about some pieces from your memorabilia collection.
So I never really considered myself a collector. What kind of got everything started was the fact that my dad actually received a autographed football from the 1964 Philadelphia Eagles. Practically the whole team signed it. Wow. I believe he still has that. And that was the first thing that I remember that my dad wanted to make sure he kept and preserved. And then recently he got in possession before Tommy McDonald passed away, he got into possession of a hat that Tommy McDonald had signed. And this was just about when he got into the, was inducted to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And wow. So unknowingly, I started collecting some memorabilia or collector's items that I didn't even realize I had. As a matter of fact, and until you inquired, I didn't realize that I really do have some collectibles. And one of the first things I collected was there used to be a sports bar in Orange County that actually used to host Pro Bowl parties, the NFL Pro Bowl parties. And they would do that every year. And most of the time they would actually raise money for charity. And I remember that the owner of the sports bar would bring in certain celebrities from the NFL to help raise money. And that's where I got to meet people like Eric Dickerson and Roman Gabriel and Mark Rippon. And I know that one of the things to help raise money, they would have items to be auctioned and you would bid on them. And I decided at the time to bid on a jersey from John Randall of the Minnesota Vikings.
Nice. And
I did win that, and he autographed it, and I still have it. I keep it very pristine. I keep it out of the light because he used a purple marker to actually sign his name. And unless it's a black marker, there's a good chance that if it gets exposed to light too much that it'll fade. So I was very aware of that. So I kind of make sure I keep it preserved. But that was one of the first things that I collected.
Now, don't they, I believe, don't they have like some glass for some jersey case like that that are like UV protected to prevent or to at least reduce the time it takes to, I think they have some stuff out on the market like that now.
And I need to pick one up for that jersey for sure, you know? But that was one of the first things that I ever collected. And at when they used to have those Pro Bowl parties, when having the former NFL players there, one of the things that I was able to get was an autograph action photo from Eric Dickerson. And I met him and I told him, you know, when I met him that I used to love to see him run. And he looked at me with this little smile and he said to me, I was pretty good. I'll always remember that. I was able to get a autograph action photo from Mark Rypien of the Washington Redskins. And that's when I first met Roman Gabriel of the Los Angeles Rams. I met him at one of those Pro Bowl parties and we actually became good friends that we would write back and forth for years. And I still have a collection of handwritten letters, autograph photos that he would sign. And when he would sign the autograph photos, he always would put Roman Gabriel 1969 MVP on each one of those. And he was just a really, really nice guy. And I really enjoyed being able to correspond with him and talk football. And I remember telling him in those days when I was a kid that the marquee second game, if there was a second game to a doubleheader, was the 49ers-Rams game, because that game was always between the Los Angeles Rams, San Francisco 49ers, Roman Gabriel versus John Brody, the fearsome foursome versus the offensive line of the 49ers. They were always classic games, always classic games. And so it was kind of nice to be able to have those conversations with Roman Gabriel and talking about those days. And he is surprised at how much I used to remember with certain games, like the 1967 LA Rams season and the 1969 LA Rams season, when they were just always trying to stave off the Baltimore Colts in those matchups. And he says, you really remember all that? I said, absolutely. I said, because back then, those were the marquee games that were on CBS.
Yeah, wow. I can't even – now you're going to make me go back and try to find some footage of some of those Brody Gabriel games, because that does sound like a great matchup.
And I still have a photo that he and I had taken at the Pro Bowl party, which I really do cherish, because I remember he was wearing a white cowboy hat. And Roman Gabriel's a big guy. I'm a big guy. You know, I'm 6'1". I'm over 200 pounds. But Roman Gabriel is taller than I am. And he must have been tough to bring down as a quarterback, because this is a big guy. And he always pretty much stayed in shape, even when I met him. So even after his playing days, he pretty much stayed in shape. But I really, truly cherish my friendship with him. I know that most recently he's been going through a few health problems, but I would like, you know, at some point that if there are any pro football events out here on the West Coast, that he would fly in from North Carolina. I don't know if that's possible, but it would be nice to be able to see him again.
Yeah, I'm sure it would. And I guess just an editor's note here for the listeners, you know, Scott saying he's a tall individual. Well, Scott is also very flexible, because we found this summer that we can take somebody with the height of Scott and crunch him up into a ball and stick him in the back of a Toyota, in the third seat of a Toyota, and drive across Pennsylvania. And we did that. And Scott's probably still suffering from that. But we had a great little road trip.
Well, it still was better than any airplane that I'm in, especially with, you know, them reducing the space in between seats. So
yeah, that's painful.
One of the other really cherished collections that I have is I got signed photographs from the 1951 LA Rams elephant backfield, two of the three members.
Really?
Yes. Hmm. Deacon Dan Taller and Paul Tank Younger. And I have to tell you, Paul Tank Younger was such a funny man. Like, he would drop one-liners and just would just have you just cracking up. He had that type of personality that was symptomatic of the players of the 1950s NFL players, that they didn't get much pay, but they played for the love of the game. And at that particular time, they always found ways to enjoy life. And I can tell you that Paul Tank Younger was one of those players. I really enjoyed talking to him. I still wish that he was alive today. And I really cherish having an autograph photo of he and Deacon Dan Taller. And the fact that I got a chance to know him and have conversations with him, because he was just a great human being and just a really nice guy that you'd want to be around and have a couple of beers with, because he, like Art Donovan, would just tell stories of a lot of different incidences that happened during the 50s. And you would love to listen to Paul Tank Younger, but I do cherish that particular piece of memorabilia that I have and I keep sacred.
I'm sure you do. Now, let me ask you a question about, you know, the very first item you talked about, and I believe you said it belongs to your father, is a 1964 autographed Eagles football. Who were some of the players that were on that ball that signed it?
Pete Retzlaff was one of them.
Okay.
And Tommy McDonald, I believe, was still on that team. I think it was just before Bobby Brown's stint with the Eagles, but I think he might have been on that. And I believe Sonny Jurgensen was on that team, and because that was just before he got traded to the Washington Redskins. Those were some of the names that I do remember. My dad, because I was a little kid, my dad would not let me touch that football for a long time.
I bet.
You know, you get a actual authentic NFL Duke football, and he was not going to put that in the hands of little kids, that's for sure.
Yeah, he'd look out the back window and you're kicking it around the yard.
Exactly.
Wow, very cool. So that's probably like a couple years after, like, Norm Van Brocklin, or he's probably gone by that point off the
right. Eagles. Norm Van Brocklin won the 1960 championship with the Eagles as the starting quarterback and then retired right after that.
Okay.
Because he ended up being the coach of the Minnesota Vikings just a couple of years later, where he used to have those run-ins with Fran Tarkington.
Right. Yeah, and then he was with the Falcons too. Wasn't he their first coach?
Yes.
Also?
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. We had the opportunity, we talked to his daughter, who wrote sort of a memoir, a sort of a love story between her father, Norm Van Brocklin, and her mother, their courtship while they were both attended Oregon. And it was quite a beautiful story and a lot of good football to it. And we had a great conversation with her. So yeah, he's always on my mind here now.
Right. One of the other collections that I have that I really cherish is when Lamar Lundy of the Fearsome Foursome became ill, his son Lamar III and the other members of the Fearsome Foursome decided to have a fundraiser to help pay for Lamar Lundy's medical bills. So that was held in the early 2000s, and that was held at California State Fullerton football field. And all the members of the Fearsome Foursome, plus Roger Brown, who replaced Rosie Greer after Rosie retired, they were all there. And they did a meet and greet to all the fans. And then there was a photo that they had duplicated of the Fearsome Foursome. And each member of the Fearsome Foursome signed that photo of the four of them. And I ended up getting two of them. I got one for my dad. And even to this day, before my dad retired, he put that photo in a frame and put it up in his office at work. And then after he retired, now he has it up in his office at his home, my parents' home in New Jersey. And he's so proud of that because he would get a lot of comments on having that photo signed by all four members of the Fearsome Foursome. And I felt a little bit bad for Roger Brown because most of the photos that actually were duplicated was of Lamar Lundy, Merlin Olsen, Deacon Jones, and Rosie Greer. And Roger Brown would sign autographs of him with the Fearsome Foursome, but it wasn't staged. It wasn't, set up as the others. So, but he was very, gracious about it. And, he would sign autographs. And it was a pleasure meeting him. Roger Brown's a very nice man, but I really cherish that. And I keep that for safekeeping. I don't have it in a frame. I do have it under glass right now. Because I just absolutely love it. And it's one of the collectibles that I really, it values a lot to me, So
I bet that's a pretty cool piece.
And I got to meet Deacon Jones because of that particular event. But also too, Deacon Jones, who was one of the most generous human beings I've ever met in my life. He and his wife, Elizabeth, set up a foundation called the Deacon Jones Foundation. And basically that foundation is to benefit inner city kids. And not only would benefit them financially, but also to help with their education. So they would set up scholarships. And I remember that Deacon used to have an event every single year. And it was always during the day of the NFC and AFC championship games. And he would hold it at this place called it was called the Fox Sports Grill. And that no longer exists, but the building does, but they don't have the Fox Sports Grill anymore. But that's where he used to have it, which was in Irvine, California. And Irvine, California is known for having the busiest movie theater on planet Earth. There is more traffic that goes through that movie theater. So the Fox Sports Grill was right next to it. And Deacon Jones used to have an event. And he used to always get celebrities to be able to come to that event. And I remember, for example, I got a chance to meet Len Barney of the Detroit Lions, who...
Right.
I swear is the best dressed former NFL player on earth. That man, his dress was impeccable. I always remember that. Bobby Mitchell of the Washington Redskins. He would get Les Josephson, Marlon McKeever, his former Rams teammates. Of course, Roman Gabriel would show up. I remember one year, Christian Okoye from the Kansas City Chiefs was there. Bob Wow. St. Clair of the San Francisco 49ers. And of course, Lamar Lundy, one of the most famous people that he actually had, he got to appear there was Michael Strahan.
No kidding. Wow.
Michael Strahan has such an unbelievable, great personality that when you meet him, you can't help but just be mesmerized by his friendliness, his smile, and his charm. And I remember that day that I met him at the foundation event one year. Michael came up to me and I introduced myself. And he looked at my sweatshirt because I was wearing a Philadelphia Eagles sweatshirt. He said, "I hate the Eagles." But, that was my introduction to Michael Strahan. But what really made that day memorable is I got the opportunity to play Michael Strahan one-on-one basketball. They had set up a basketball court just outside the Fox Sports Grill. And there would be people driving by that would literally stop because Michael would recognize them, would hold like long conversations with the drivers going by as as we were playing, and people were just like their mouths would drop because it's like, oh my God, that's Michael Strahan. But I got a chance to play him one-on-one basketball. Now, I will say that I was talented in basketball. I was a basketball all-star in Pennsylvania, my home state, and yet he kicked my butt. He was not – I was wearing a Philadelphia Eagles sweatshirt, so I don't think he was going to show any mercy on me whatsoever.
I bet not. So were the people that were going by saying, hey, that's Michael Strahan playing basketball against some guy.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
I was like invisible to everyone else, you know. But Michael was so gracious. After the game was over, he actually gave me an NFC East football jersey, which I still cherish and keep because of the fact that it came from Michael Strahan. He just what Deacon Jones did when he would bring people from the NFL to the foundation event, it automatically attracted people. And, you know, one of the biggest crowds that the foundation ever had each and every year was when Michael Strahan was there, because those were announced just before the event would begin. And I got to tell you, I never saw so many people crowded in one place. I'm sure that it came close to breaking fire codes, but it was just fabulous, you know. And I'm grateful that I got a chance to meet him and play him one-on-one in basketball.
Yeah, that's a story that remember the rest of your life, and I'm sure anybody that saw it will probably remember too. So that's those unique situations like that. The basketball game with a former NFL All-Pro and Hall of Famer and everything else you can say about him, sack leader. So
absolutely. I really loved the fact that Deacon Jones was able to want to give back, and that it didn't matter to him after his football career was over, that he really cared about future generations. Because Deacon Jones was the best. And I still get to see his wife, Liz, Elizabeth, every once in a while, because they will still hold certain events. They don't hold them as regularly as they used to. I know that that was an annual event for the Deacon Jones Foundation to have it on the day of the AFC championship games. And that was a big deal. We all always look forward to that event, but it really meant a lot to me and a lot of people that Deacon Jones really cared about future generations and would give back to the community, and to be able to do a lot of fundraising for those kids and to give them a chance. And that was just the type of person he really was.
Well, that's great to hear that about somebody that when you think about Deacon Jones, you just think about him, you know, this fierce competitor that's wanting to rip somebody's head off on a football field, and just be able to think of him in that light too, you know, off the field, to be kind and live up to their stature of being a great human being too. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I remember when his book came out, Head Slap. Everybody would go up to him and just try to get Deacon Jones to just say it like he used to say it on NFL films, head slap, you know.
That's pretty good.
he was fun to be around. He was a great human being. He cared about his teammates, especially those guys, Merlin Olsen, Lamar Lunday, Rosie Greer, Roger Brown. He cared about his teammates, and they remained close friends right until Rosie Greer is the only one that is left. Roger Brown, I think, is still alive, but I remember meeting Rosie Greer again a couple of years ago. It was right after it was in the middle of the pandemic, but it made it a little bit more safe to be able to have events. And so I got a chance to sit down and have a photo taken of me and Rosie Grier, which I still have and I still like, you know.
Yeah, that's really cool. Boy, so you got to actually meet a lot of these fearsome foursome, you know, not only to get in a photo, but actually meet them in separate occasions too. So
yeah,
pretty cool.
I think it's an advantage to living in Southern California because of the fact that the warmer weather has attracted so many people here. And it's almost that you can't go anywhere without running into someone who is very well known or who maybe have that famous status or, you know, and I've met a lot. As a matter of fact, I've met most of the former pro football players here in Southern California than anywhere else in the country. And I come from a football state and, you know, where you live and where I live, football is a religion. And so you would think that you'd be able to meet more of the people who've played the game, but you come to Southern California, there's, you know, such an incredible chance to be able to meet them because there's events that are held everywhere. And you really get a chance to talk about pro football history, which they don't mind talking about, you know, in the days that they played. And they love to tell war stories. They love to tell stories about their playing days. And you get into really good conversations with them.
Yeah, I'll bet. I mean, of course, wouldn't you too, if you got to talk about something that you were really good at and something you really enjoyed doing with a bunch of guys that you enjoyed being around and had some success, you know, definitely you want to talk about those stories. That's probably fond memories for them and takes them back to a happy place, I'm sure.
Yeah. So I'm hoping to, you know, now that I'm very aware about collecting things, you know, from the days of pro football and, I know that there'll be future events coming up here in Southern California, and I hope to meet more of the stars of yesteryear and even some of the current players that are playing the game right now and get a chance to talk. And hopefully I'll be able to collect more things and add to my collection.
Well, Scott, we are so happy that we were a part of you realizing that you are a collector. So that's a great thing. And you really have some really nice things. And you probably even have a bunch of other things that you're not even thinking of that are really pieces of memorabilia. And I think probably in the coming weeks, you'll probably be walking by something or going through a drawer and saying, oh, you know what? I have that too. And I have this. So yeah, you're going to find that. And I think that's one of the magic things of being a collector and being a sports collector and football collector, just a great thing. And you're going to see things all the time. They're going to remind you of that. And really thank you for coming on today and sharing your collection, sharing this great history, you know, on and off the field from some of these greats that played our game that we love to watch. And we thank you for that.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. It was great talking to you.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.